Welcome and breathe in air. Abstract Illusions Radio, the show that explores and exposes the many aspects of expression, with your host, Jennifer Hillman.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you very much for tuning in tonight. This is Jennifer Hillman, and tonight's show we have Nicole Jackson. She was born in poverty in Jacksonville, Florida. She grew up in the projects where she was surrounded by domestic violence, drugs, and had her first child when she was 16. As she had trouble getting anything going, but she graduated from high school, and after a decade of dedicating focus and deep faith, she became her own CEO of Mortgage Educator of America. She is also an author and the founder of The Setup, a national motivation workshop aimed at the urban section, offering advice and spiritual help to teenage mothers, children of poverty, and victims of drug-addicted parents. Her new book, From the Hood to the Hills, examines her journey from the project to the successful CEO. I got this, I found her through unusual means, and I was getting my website redone, and they said, check out her website, and I started to, just to see what they do, and all of a sudden I'm reading and I'm going, wow, I need to talk to this woman. So Nicole, thank you very much for being on air
tonight.
Thank you for having me. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
It was very spiritual. You know, Spirit guided me to you, so there's obviously a huge message for you that you're getting out there, and I am very proud to help you get that message out.
Thank you so much.
So why don't you tell the listeners just a little bit about your story, because you've had an amazing experience.
My story tells a lot of what is going on today in a lot of urban sectors of throughout the country. And basically, I grew up with a mother that had been on drugs throughout my childhood and living without any type of guidance, basically doing what I knew how to do, which was go to school, clothe myself, and just to try to make an impression in life as to try to be something when nobody is actually speaking to you, saying, become a productive person in society. You can do this. You can become a teacher, doctor, lawyer. No one was speaking those type of words. And I did find an outlet by watching television, which was Oprah Winfrey, and I seen that she was doing something totally different than my mother. And I basically started comparing the two and visualizing what I could become, even though my surroundings was much bigger than the actual person on the television screen. I was, you know, pregnant by the age of 15, had a daughter, still didn't think that I was going to do anything because nobody told me I was going to do anything. And there was, you know, nothing that I could do that being a pregnant teen, going to school, you know, I was basically confusing myself with my mother. It was a connection that I cannot be better if because I'm here. Look at everyone around me. You can't be better than them. And that followed me throughout my life until I had noticed when I went on different jobs that you could become better. You are an individual. So, therefore, I was attached to my surroundings and my family in an emotional type way. If that sounds, you know, if someone can make a sense of that, it was just that I could never see myself being anywhere else, and I carried that around with me, and a lot of lack of confidence because of who my mother was and what she did. It was like a secret that I held, and only the people in my neighborhood knew about that secret. So that secret that I held in was holding me back, and that's what I had to realize, is that once I let it go and disconnect myself from her, it was better that way. You know, a lot of people can't understand that, but you've been, you know, you're with someone and you kind of attach yourself or say that you're like that person because you're there with them all the time, when really you are an individual and you have to see the separation. And mm-hmm. as I moved forward in life, I realized that nobody couldn't see her. She was not attached to me. And I was a grown woman before I realized that I have to make my own mark. I can't live off of who my mother is and what she's doing, and that's why I could never be anything.
Now, you went through the process of really, I mean, you really, as a child, you mean, you saw a lot of abuse. You saw a lot of different traumatic situations growing up. Do you feel that it kind of numbed you enough that you just felt all your emotions, there was no way you could feel that you could be anywhere else because you were just kind of traumatized by the whole situation?
Yes, I was numb to love because I had never heard my mother or for anyone of that matter tell me that I love you. You are important. You are here to do something. I never heard those words. The first time I heard those words was from my boyfriend at age 15, which made me love him and hold on to him and just totally go after everything with him. And I explained that section of my life in the book, which led to a lot of abuse with him because I was clinging to him just because of those very important words that were not spoken in my life, just simple words that I was loved, I was needed, I am secure, I have a purpose in life. Those simple four words would have turned my life around.
So do you think a lot of people in similar situations, because of the upbringing, there is a codependency out of just the necessity of somebody saying, I need you? It just makes you feel, okay, I'm supposed to be with this person because I feel like I'm really needed by that person, even though they're just taking from you, they're not really giving to you?
That is definitely so, but I had always been abused, so I really didn't know what a good life consisted of. I did not know what gentle talking or I tell in the book a lot of harsh things my mother had said and continued to say throughout my life. So I had a lot of verbal abuse also I lived with. So I didn't know what it was to be treated well or what it is to be treated good by another person or to show appreciation, because I had never been appreciated and I never had been spoken to and told that, you know, I can, just to build up my confidence in myself. So I had not known a passionate or a real sincere side besides when I was very young, as I begin the story with that I lived with someone else, and that was the only part that I knew of.
Right.
And I had to, you know, those words were still not in me. They came from a person. I started to look at him and say, he loves me, but he loves me. You know, he said it, he loves me. So that was the whole ground foundation of, you know, what led me into a path of it. My childhood just drove me, led me straight to my surroundings and someone that I was connected to because of where I was from. It kind of went together. I didn't try to see outside of my area or outside of the person who was like my father. He was
right.
Like my father, so I didn't know of a positive male role model. He was a little bit better than my father, you know, that's so therefore I thought he was a good man. And,
right.
And not knowing that just because you come from bad, you know, worst or bad, it's not.
Yeah, I mean, it might be a step up, but it's still not far. So when did you start realizing that the importance of those words and having healthy values towards those words, so you didn't have the codependency and the clinginess, and what took place that you said, wait a minute, something's off here, I'm not, that you've really realized that there's something better for you. I mean, I know that in the book you looked for a church. You found God in very unusual ways, in a way. I mean, you just felt that there was something better. You prayed. You had your faith. It was always there with you. When did faith really change your perspective and inspire you to get in a better place? Was there one definite spot that you said, this is it, this is God's got a plan and this is it? This is the direction I should go.
Yes, I had always been, there was always people drawn to me as a child to take me to church and those sort of things. So I had those words sown into me. Those words that people sow into you, they are sown into you. They just have a certain time when they have to manifest. And once I realized that I can do something on my own without this man, without my child's father, I realized that I can move forward without him. So once I started getting around other people on jobs, I started noticing that that I can actually go somewhere in life, and I started noticing the difference between different churches that I was attending. But I had a real revelation actually when I closed probably on my fifth or sixth house that, you know, I'm doing a little something a little unusual than people where I'm from. And then I had heard through words a pastor speaking about favor, that, you know, God has favored. Mm-hmm. And that's when I realized that I must be a favorite of God, because there was no one I knew in my immediate surroundings or throughout my family that had come so far so fast. And that's when I realized that I need to make a connection with this person, this God, which is not a person, that was taking me this far for a reason. So I had to research that out and see what was my purpose here. And this was my purpose, was for me to go through what I've went through so that I can help other people. Then I realized it wasn't even about me. My struggle had nothing to do with me.
And what do you feel, the struggle and all that, what was it for? If the struggle really wasn't part of you, what was it for?
The struggle wasn't for me, it was for someone else. It was for someone else to actually know that it's not where you begin, that it's all about your ending. It has nothing to do with your beginning. And if everyone on this earth is on this earth to do something, and we're on this earth to be productive, we're on this earth to live our lives as a living testimony for someone else to learn from. It's not about me, my four and no more, my two kids and nobody else. It's supposed to be to give. And my life, I give it away. It's a gift. I hand people my life in a book, and several books to follow after that. So it has been a gift to a lot of people who have thanked me for it. So that's why I say my life is used to better someone else, to let them know forward is the only way we should be moving, and it should never be stagnant, because God is not a stagnant God. He's a forward-moving God. And as you see that in my book, when I explain, it's a full, constant forward motion. Even though there was a lot of bumpy areas, but the one thing I did never do was go backwards.
Right. Now, do you feel the fact you had some you worked in a bank, and do you feel that some of your jobs really helped build your self-esteem to help you give that backbone to move forward into the mortgage area? To really, because you weren't satisfied with just doing banking. You needed more of a challenge, because you had the brains, you had the stamina, you had the determination. Do you feel that those little baby steps really helped you push you where you are so you can help other people get motivated?
Yes. Working, when I started working, and then when I noticed what I was doing, you know, people would say, you know, where do you work? And, of course, when you say you work at the bank, you know, it's acceptable. It's better than saying, you know, I clean, you know, or whatever the case may be. It was a little bit more questions that came along with that as to, how do I do this, and this is about this. And I started wondering, why were they asking me questions? I just worked there. But then I realized that it was the job function that I was performing, that I can actually help somebody with that. But mostly it was people that were on the job. That's why I explained in the book also about different supervisors who noticed my potential at first, because I never noticed it. I never knew at that point of me working inside of the banks that I had all this potential, or that I was smart, because nobody had never told me I was smart. I just thought I was just a regular average student or average individual that, you know, had a job. And there were supervisors along the way throughout the process telling me that you should do this and you should go farther and you know so much. So those were still formed by words.
Right. Right. Now, you really emphasize the power of the words. Now, what do you feel is, I mean, definitely if you hear negative words constantly, it does have an impact on you, most definitely. If there is anything you would say to somebody right now that would say, really inspire them to understand what the power of the word is, what would you say?
Words were used to create life, to form life. Words are very powerful. We have all heard, you know, fixes, stones, they may break my bones, but words never hurt. Words not only hurt, they can actually kill you. Because if you don't have a balance of words that are in you, positive and negative, to jumpstart you, it takes positive and negative to move you forward. And if you just have a constant piling of negative words in you, those words start to come out of you. And once those negative words come out of you, you speak your life into existence. You speak on your own life. I'm never going to be nothing. Well, you're not.
Right.
I'm never going to do that. Well, you're not. I'm never going to have that type of job. Well, you're not, because you're speaking it. That's the first step, is that you always have to speak whatever it is into existence, and don't let someone else speak over your life and let that be the end. You'll never have anything. And then you go around telling yourself you'll never have anything. You have to cover those words up with positive. But I never spoke on what other people were putting into my life as to, you know, you're not going to do this, you're not going to do that. Other people start putting the positive words into me as well. So what words are like seeds. They are sown and then they will manifest out. But you have to form your life by speaking always the direction that you want to go in.
So in for manifestation of a more positive life to where you go, it's like stating intention. I'm going to move myself forward to my highest potential. If you keep repeating those kind of words, then spirit will really come in and bring those people to bring you to your highest potential. Is that basically what you're saying?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yes, that's what I'm saying. And also I'm saying that we have to understand that our destiny has already been laid before us in the spiritual realm. We just have to connect with it. And those words are the guiding to that destiny, to that purpose. And if you veer off with your words, you would never get there. And those words have to be spoken positively, and they have to be spoken on a consistent basis. And you also have to use your imagination to get to catapult you in the positive direction. Also, you can't really speak something that is not in your mind. Everything starts in your mind first, and then the words come out of your mouth. So
right.
Imagination is the ultimate point. You always have to imagine yourself where you want to be, and never where you are. Never where you are. Always where you want to be. And once you start that imagination gets in your mind, you're going to speak it, because what's in you will come out of you. But we lost something that was given to us in the beginning of life that God gave us, which was imagination. He gave us an imagination as kids. We lost it somewhere along the line. We thought we didn't need it anymore, that it was a dream, it was a childlike thing.
Mm-hmm.
And really that's not, we were always supposed to dream. We were always supposed to use our imagination. And somewhere when we got grown, people told us that we were a daydreamer or pretending too much, and we lost that.
Now, so would you say today in society that that's something that we need to bring back into school, is time to sit and daydream and write stories about what we want our lives to be like, what we feel it's going to be as a child, as a young child, and kind of really be more supportive of that vision?
Yes, we do have to let children know that it's great to have a creative imagination and to because most of the times when kids daydream or they're using their imaginations, it's never really negative. It's always something positive.
Right.
And we have to learn to let them know that that is something that they're supposed to do. You're supposed to use your imagination. You're supposed to dream. That's why it was given to you as a child, to daydream and to pretend, because it's supposed to be used throughout our life. And we do need to bring in schools also that we have to start speaking with children in on a more of a level to about education is very, very important. I can't stress it enough. But we also have to start sowing some words into them to catapult them forward, because some of them will not go to college. And we have to make sure we sow the right seeds so that whatever they do, they know that they're not just supposed to be existing in this life and not working and not being productive. So those words need to be spoken in school, throughout school, so that we can get them in the mind frame of that they're supposed to be a productive person in society.
Now, what words are there that need to be spoken?
The imagination words, the words that need to be spoken is we have to let them know, we have to start putting in their minds the various types of words. I mean, we have to let them know that, you know, you are important, you are secure. You know, a lot of children are going to school and they don't feel that they're secure, that they're safe. They don't feel that they're loved. They don't feel that they'll go anywhere. I'm speaking from myself. I went to school and I didn't feel I was loved. I didn't feel that I was secure. I was unsafe when I went home. I was very unsafe, but I came to school and I didn't speak about it because no one asked me. And that's what we're doing now today in schools. We're not asking. We're trying to teach over all these issues that are going on inside of the house, and it's kind of getting to be a little impossible to do, and that's why we see the dropout rates and the things that we're seeing is because we're trying to teach over something we're not asking about, and the teachers are not trained in that area to deal with issues that I was dealing with. I was going to school saying no to drugs, but I actually came home and watched drugs all day, and I never opened my mouth, but if somebody would have asked me, I would have told them.
Right. Now, what was it about you that did say no to drugs? I mean, was it because of what you saw at home that you said, I don't want that life?
It was because of me watching television, knowing that Oprah, Bill Cosby's show, I was watching something that was different than my surroundings. We always have to have two sides. We have to know the two sides. Some kids are not gonna use the television as a role modeling tool, because I came from a positive environment by the age of 7, which I speak about that in the book.
Right.
I did know of another life style prior to the one that I had started living in. So I did know a time before that I was stress free and I didn't have to worry whether, you know, if a fight was going to break out in the house tonight. So we do have to have both sides of that story brought to the table, and we have to start asking these kids what is going on in their household.
So, you mentioned TV as a positive influence for you. Do you think there is some televisions and some films that are actually just doing more of the negative and inspiring children in a negative way? I mean, we are having a lot of children now that are going into school and shooting other children or stabbing other children. The violence in school is more on the increase, at least presently. Do you feel that there is enough positive influence in the TV still?
I don't know right about now what the positive is. I know when I was younger, there was a lot of shows, positive shows on.
Right.
Right now, I don't know, and that's why we have to have people that come out and speak it and tell them that, which is the setup, the show that I do, we bring that to the forefront in motivational speeches along with illustrations, which is some of the negative things that they have came across on their TVs and the things that they are watching. So I am there to give them two sides to that story that they're watching, that they can get an inside vision of this is not real. This,
right.
This person is acting. So I make it very plain and very clear that, you know, even with rappers, I bring both sides of the table to the table for them to see that they're not living the lifestyle that they're writing to you, and then let me show you. So I show them both sides. So that's the only way that we can counteract the negativity that they're seeing on the television screen is by showing them a positive.
Right. So are you in favor of the government having regulations on, like, the music and the TV ratings? Do you think that's a positive thing for parents and kids to realize that there are certain things that they really shouldn't be listening to, or they need to have, like, a more of discerning ear about the fact that it isn't real? It's just something that is outside of them.
Yes, we should have regulations on all music and television shows, but to me, that's not working at all.
No.
Because these kids still have the music. They're still looking at the shows because we, as parents, we can't watch them every hour of the day because of our work schedule.
Right.
And that's why we have to let them know that it is not real, and we can prove it to you that it's not real. And that's what I do. I prove it to them that it's not real, and I show them that you're being set up. That's why the show is called The Setup. I just tell them you're being set up. It's not real. And I show it to them through visual. They're very visual to sit and actually hear a speech. That is not really giving them both sides of the story. I noticed that me just speaking wasn't making it was making an impact, but the visual of it being replayed in their mind of how I showed them the difference of what they're seeing and what they're hearing versus how these people are actually living, then they can replay those visions in their mind. And now when they look at them, they can say, well, I remember that she said that that's just that, and they can actually see it. So we have to do both. I mean, we still have to keep the restrictions, and we still have to show them that it's not real.
Okay, so you started the setup, and you basically what, you go and into schools and such, or how does the setup work, and where can somebody find out more information about your setup? Let's talk about that program for a few minutes, okay? You really are going in there and you're showing them both sides, what is real and what is not real. You're giving them a choice on what really to trust, really, and have faith in. Are you telling them during this that what's on TV is not necessarily what's reflecting society?
Yes. The setup is a motivational speech along with illustrations. So it basically, I go in and I the type we do different skits showing, and we have teenagers playing the roles, and we have them playing both sides, and we show them that everything that starts in a person's mind is what they really are actually doing. So I bring to the forefront that, you know, a rapper may say that they're on the streets and they're selling drugs, but that's not true, and I show you how it's not true. I show you because everything starts in the mind, and as the mind thinks, the body moves. So if he was thinking about living the way he's telling you you should live, he would be where you live. And they're like, oh, I think because everything starts in the mind. He lives in Beverly Hills. He lives in a mansion. So why is he telling you to be on the street selling drugs when that's not what he's doing? Because if he really was really thinking about doing that and really wanted to do that and that was in his mind, that's what he would be doing. So I showed them those two things, that as the mind thinketh, the body moves. And if your mind is not thinking that, your body is not moving. And I show them examples of if you do move from out of a hood setting with the same mindset, you get the same hood result. Your mind has to change, and then your body moves. So that is mainly what we do in the setup, and we show them how, you know, to decipher between what is real and what is not real. And then we get into them utilizing their skills and their gifts, because a lot of teenagers are being, they're coming home and they're utilizing TV and internet and all those things, and we're not teaching them to be productive. And I try to get them to start utilizing their gifts now. There's no need to wait. You can utilize your gift now. If you can draw, you're supposed to be drawing. If you can write, you're supposed to be writing. So I have a lot of different sketches to show both sides of what they're doing with their gifts. They laugh at the side that they're actually using because they're not being productive. And then I show them a sketch that shows them what they should be doing with the gift. And that came to me because with me writing the book, that was actually my gift that I had misutilized, my writing and my speaking and the way that I used to talk to people and, you know, write all kind of, you know, letters to the jailhouse and all those type of things to motivate the person I was with when I should have been trying to motivate kids and parents and the things that I'm doing now. I could have been doing that when I was in high school, because the gift was noticed then when I was a teen parent that they wanted me to start speaking on behalf of all teen parents throughout the school system. And I told them, no, I'm not doing that. So because I knew, you know, spoke very well when I got up to represent the teen parents, because it wasn't the group that I wanted to represent, I didn't use my gift anymore until I realized that, you know, there was something more that I was supposed to be doing. So the gift is there. The kids are not utilizing it. So we show them the second half of, you know, those gifts that they're supposed to be using. Though we have a show that's coming up here in Jacksonville, September the 20th. Tickets are sold at Ticketmaster. And to get more information on how to book a show in any area, you can go to our website, hoodtothehills.com.
Excellent. Now, it's very interesting how, you know, Spirit just kind of shows you a glimpse of what you're supposed to be doing. And if you're not ready, he goes, okay, we'll give you a little time. We'll give you a little time to work into it. But you're going to be doing it one way or another. I always think it's amazing how it's like you get these clues, but you really need to be aware of what's going on to really know, oh, so that's what I'm supposed to be doing. And I think it's wonderful that you're giving kids, teenagers, little clues on what their skills are and where they're supposed to be going. I think that's awesome. So what was it that really kind of clued you in? Was it writing the book that was saying, oh, I really should be doing this? I really can help kids figure out what they're doing?
Yes, writing the book, definitely, because I didn't think that, you know, my life was, you know, any different or anything. I thought that I would have to be someone of a real big stature to try to, you know, make an impact or help someone. Then when I read the book, I realized that, you know, I came a long way in a short amount of time, and my life, what I've lived thus far, can still help someone. It can still help someone. And that's when I realized, after I got so many responses, that my life actually helped them or let them know that they're supposed to be doing something. So that's what I really started to pay attention to. I had to read the book back to myself to say, oh, wow, I mean, it is something that can help someone. And then, but I had to spiritually connect and say, what is it that I'm supposed to be doing? Because I didn't know. I thought, you know, I'm working on making a great living. You know, now me and my kids are living totally different than what I grew up. That was it, but that's not it. Mm-hmm. Your life thus far, it can help someone. And that's when I realized that, yes, it can help someone, and that's when I decided to publish it and let it do what it has been doing, which is helping.
Well, I just want to remind the audience, we are talking to Nicole Jackson, who wrote a book, From the Hood to the Hills. And if you do want to call in with your questions or comments, please do at 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Please call in. She's had an amazing life, going from really going from a situation where you were surrounded by drugs and abuse, and really being, you were thrown around from family to family, place to place. You really weren't secure in the fact of, okay, this is home, this is where I'm supposed to be. You really had a lot of movement physically to keep you kind of insecure in a way, don't you think?
Yes, I had a lot of moving around. I attended a lot of schools, and with me attending all those schools, I still managed to never fail a grade and to just catch on and just do my work, and really didn't have any studying or anything of that nature either. And I sometimes think back, maybe if I had a parent helping me study or pushing me to do something, I thought I could have did a lot better. But then I have to also think and say that I'm doing exactly what I'm supposed to be doing.
Right.
You know, that's why it did not happen, because this is what I'm supposed to be doing. But I did move around a lot, because nothing was actually secure when you have a mother that's on drugs. The drug is the priority. You're just like, me and my sister and my brothers, we lived like we were just a piece of the furniture. Nobody really kind of talked to us, and we could go somewhere for a weekend or wherever we wanted to go. We just lived. It wasn't, you know, nobody looking for me, or I wasn't missed if I didn't come home or if I came home late, or, you know, it was, and a lot of kids are living just like that now.
Right. Now, do you think also that some children today are taking things for granted because of all the materialism and all that's in many ways given? Now, a lot of people in poverty, they see and they say, I want that, I want that. Do you think it's a positive motivation to say, I want that iPod, to push them to go get the job and to earn the money and so they have that iPod? Or do you think it's almost a negative and a positive at the same time?
I don't think it's a positive. I actually think it's a negative, because we shouldn't be rewarding kids who are not excelling and that are not being productive. The kids that I talk to, the teenagers, they should be being productive to earn something, because that's the way our society goes. Nothing is going to just be handed to you. You have to be productive in order to get those things, and that's what I teach my teenage daughter, is that you don't just say, I want that, and it happens, even though if you're a parent that can't afford it. We need to start setting standards and letting them know that in order to get certain things, because now the things that the kids are asking for are not minor things, we need to know what they're going to do in order to earn that, because that's the way our society lives. It's not going
right.
to be, you're not going to be able to point out something and say, I want it, and it just happens. So that's why I try to get through to them, utilize what you have, and that way this is a barter system, you know. Well, that's the way we live. You have to explain it to them instead of just running to the store and getting it. And therefore, they never know how you earned it, earned the money to get it, and it just don't happen as easy. And then when they get their first paycheck, they're shocked that they can't live off of it, and everything is so hard. Because
right.
we never told them, and we just ran out and got it, made it look so easy. And we need to not make things look so easy. We have to show them And that's what I'm about. It's about showing them so that they won't have a shock when they go off to college and don't know how to manage their money and live.
Right. Do you think that the setup is also your program? Is it helping people understand, the kids understand? What age range, by the way, is your the setup really focused on? How long, how young does it go?
The age range is focused on 13 on up, but we do have, I do have a show that I do for adults, because a lot of adults have not had the words spoken into them or know what they're supposed to be doing, and then those adults have to be spoken into also, because now we have adults that's raising children that are just like them, non-productive in society. So we do have two different shows. One is 13 on up, and then there's a show for adults only, because we have a lot of parents that lived like I lived, and now they have teenagers, and they're doing what their mother did, and it's just an ongoing ongoing manifestation of what, you know, happened in the 70s and early 80s.
Right. Now, do you have any plans on doing anything younger, or do you think the age of 13 is catching them early enough to really give them the words so they can keep their imagination and to keep those dreams alive and to really move them forward?
Well, I have done speaking engagements for children that are smaller, and I do have to keep it real simple and plain, but when you do speak to kids, these kids were second graders, and they do understand gifts. They do understand imagination. They do understand that moving forward and always reaching for your goals. So they are able to understand those simple terms even on a second grade level. And they enjoyed it, and it was a back and forth communication. So they it can go younger. It can be spoken into a younger crowd.
Nicole, we do have a caller. Hello, caller. How are you?
I'm just fine.
Can you speak up just a bit?
Yes, I'm fine.
Okay. And what is your name?
My name is Jean.
Hi, Jean. And what would you like to talk to Nicole about?
Well, I just wanted to ask her, if you're a parent that has unfortunately experienced negatives in raising your children because you were a single parent and the pressure was really great, and the children are now grown and married, is there anything that you think that a parent can do at this point to either apologize or help them to realize the situation was the cause for most of what went on when they were growing up?
Yes, a parent can apologize and let them know what they went through. I always wish that my mother would have told me how she was raised and what had caused her to make the decisions that she made. And that's the part that a lot of us children who have grown up in the way that we lived with drugs and everything, we don't our mothers never tell us their story. I'm telling my story to make, and it's actually therapeutic for me. And if my mother could tell her story, then it would become a healing process for us all. So I think the mothers who have are regretful in the way that they've raised their kids, they need to start by telling their story, and then we all can get an understanding of that it was just something from their past that led them the wrong way, and we can all start a healing process that way.
So do you think it would be helpful if I could write a book? It's something I've always wanted to do, but I've hesitated. I don't know why, but I just have, I guess.
If it's a book that would help, it's fine. It's also just sitting down with the kids, letting them know your story from the beginning, because that's what I did. I let my kids know my story from the beginning, and a lot of people knew that I was a little standoffish. I was a, you know, I was this sheltered and individual, this person who just didn't have any feelings, but they didn't know my story. Now they understand. So your story can either be written, or you can talk to your kids about your story.
Okay. All right. Well, I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you
so much for calling in. I really appreciate you calling in with your question.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Do you think a lot of parents out there are, you know, in a way feeling guilty and don't know how to relieve that guilt because
yes.
of what happened? I mean, circumstances just happen. They made bad choices, or the circumstances kind of forced them in one direction, and the kids are the ones that get the brunt of it at times.
Yes, my mom definitely feels guilty about everything, but feeling guilty don't really help us at all. We need her to say something. We need her to tell us what was her problem. So I started doing my own research to say that my mother had some major problems, and I don't know who her mother was if she won't tell me.
Right.
So they're holding on to this guilt that actually can be released the same way that I released it. And that's the problem with the parents. They don't want to talk about it. They it's over. It's in the past. But the past can hold us back, and a lot of them don't understand that. We need to know what happened in the past to move ourselves forward. And I don't know how my mother was. From what I can see, with my mother never speaking anything into her girls or saying anything, as to my mother always said, or, you know, I always hear people say, you know, my mother always told me. I never heard those words from my mother, that her mother told her this, or her mother told her that, or she
right.
told me anything about a woman or anything that I can take with me to tell my daughter. So I'm thinking that maybe her mother didn't say much of anything. That's all I can assume at this point.
Also, do you think, you know, I know when I was going through the process myself of moving forward and figuring out how I got where I got, it did help me just to look at where my parents came from. But they, like many, don't want to talk about it. And it's like I talked to other relatives who told me more about this story because my parents did not want to. Do you feel that the family unit, the larger family unit, is helpful to have some contact with? Or I understand it's easier in some ways if there's a parent that's really negative to break away. I mean, if they're not helping you, why stick around? But to get the stories from other people within the family, do you think that helps to get a little more background for you to know where you're going from?
Yes, it does. And sometimes it helps to get any information that you can, so that you can get an understanding, so that you can actually forgive your mother, so that you can actually say, okay, now I see where she came from, and she, you know, made some wrong choices, even in her situation was bad. So that way it would help if there was another family member to talk to. Unfortunately, in our family, they just think that, I mean, hey, that's not the way you guys live. It's not a big deal. People live like that all the time. So when you have a whole family of the same mindset, it's hard. And that is what is happening in our culture a lot. The whole family has this same mindset, that we don't think that we are affected by our childhood. We don't really believe in counseling and talking and showing emotions. A lot of our culture but not everyone, but a lot. So there's really no one to really ask what happened with my grandmother. I really wanted to start with her, my grandmother.
Okay, and we have another caller. Nicole, hello, caller.
Hello. I'm enjoying the show very, very much. Thank you.
Oh, and what is your first name?
Louise.
Louise, thank you very much for calling in. And what would you like to say to Nicole?
You know, when you go through a life, I had a similar but not exactly the same. And it seems like the universe or the world is telling you you're worthless. You know how kids can internalize that when our parents don't value us and we're moved around? And you know how we internalize that? I was just wondering if she'd struggle with, you know, inner messages that, and how to change those.
Yeah.
You know, it's like my parents abandoned me. I bet the universe is going to abandon me kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I do understand solely. I do understand exactly what you're saying. It was something that I was missing, and I still, even as an adult, I still feel that I'm missing something. It's kind of strange being around your friends, and they have this mother-daughter type relationship, and they have this, you know, it's something that you can't really relate to. I can't really even explain it at this point, but it still is a lack there, that I never had a conversation, with my mother about just being a woman, just a normal, you know, I envy people who are mm-hmm. just talking to their mother. I mean, it's just something simple as that. Mm-hmm. And,
but does that
I understand exactly what you're saying. Uh-huh.
Of kind of unworthiness or I'm not worth. I mean, that's the message I got that I'm really working on trying to let go of.
Yeah.
You're doing a good job, I want to say.
Nobody cares if I come home or nobody cares. You know what I mean? So it's like, yeah. I'm not worth anything. That's kind of what I internalized. I just wonder if you could speak on that.
Yes, it's really hard for me to explain because I did feel that I'm not, you know, worthy. I didn't really know that mothers were so important. And the worth that you put into your kids, that you're worth, you know, I just never felt that I was worth anything that
and
I was.
And how did you get over that and accomplish so much then? I guess that's what I'm asking. How did you go past that?
I really don't know. I kind of put it in the back of my mind.
She really, if you read her book, she really does really illustrate very nicely how she got through it. I mean, it is really step by step. You really understand that she slowly built her self-esteem by really recognizing that there was people around her that did care about her and her potential. And, Louise, you're doing an awesome job. I just want to say that, you know, applaud you because you've worked through a lot
yes.
of stuff. And,
yes, thank you.
And I really feel that you need to appreciate yourself even more than you are, and you're doing that slowly. But really, everybody around you is a mirror. And if you really take a moment and really say, okay, what is this person reflecting to me? Is it something that's making me feel good about myself? You start understanding and start kind of weeding out what really isn't reflecting what you really truly are. And I think
mm-hmm.
that a lot of the people, worthiness, I think, is almost like patience and worthiness are like top on the list for everybody down here to learn. Because we really all do have a lot of serious obstacles put in front of us. I mean, literally, we're innocent, and all of a sudden, we get all these negative thoughts and images around us that are saying, no, you're not supposed to do that, but you're supposed to have this, you know, this golden cup filled with everything, and yet we're not able to really really get a grasp of it because we don't have the foundation. And I do want to say her book does show and illustrate.
All right, I'll check that out. Thanks.
Thank you. And with that, Nicole, the time is up. It goes quite quickly, doesn't it?
Yes.
So I do want to thank you very much, Nicole Jackson. Her book is From the Hood to the Hills. The website is www.fromthehoodtothehills.com. There's a lot of information. There is information on the workshop coming up in September. If you're in the Jacksonville, Florida area in September 20th.
That's correct.
And the tickets are available on
Ticketmaster.
Ticketmaster, so if you could do that. So, and thank you very much again. It's very inspirational.
Thank you.
And with that, with each breath of air, we hope you gain new inspiration and insights. Thank you very much. This is Jennifer Hellman, wishing you many blessings and good night.